Orb, Volume 2, Number 2. Risk. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. This episode started with a blog post from almost exactly 2 years ago. So I get email from a good former student applying for a job and asking for a recommendation. Sure, I say. Tell me what you think I should say. I then get a draft letter back in which the student has described their work and fitness for the job in terms so superlative it would make an assistant brand manager blush. So I write my letter, looking over the student's self-assessment and toning it down so that it sounds like it's coming from a person and not a PR department, and send it off. And then, as I get over my annoyance, I realize that by overstating their abilities, the student has probably gotten the best letter out of me they could have gotten. Now, can you guess the gender of the student involved? This was written by a New York University instructor named Clay Shirky. His correspondent was, of course, a man. The blog post was titled, "A Rant About Women." He went on, "In theory, the gender of my former student should be a coin toss. In practice, I might as well have given him the pseudonym Mustache McMasculine for all the mystery there was." He goes on, "I'm not concerned that women don't engage in enough building of self-confidence or self-esteem. I'm worried about something much simpler. Not enough women have what it takes to behave like arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks." He talks about con artists that simply don't care whether they get caught. It's not that women will be better off being con artists. A lot of con artists aren't better off being con artists either. It's just that until women have role models who are willing to risk incarceration to get ahead, they'll miss out on channeling smaller amounts of self-promoting con artistry to get what they want. And if they can't do that, they'll get less of what they want than they want. There is no upper limit to the risks men are willing to take in order to succeed, and if there is an upper limit for women, they will succeed less. They will also end up in jail less, but I don't think we get rewards without the risks. Now, I don't take such a strong position. However, I do see his point. It might best be summed up as, fake it till you make it. I recall a time in the mid-80s when I was working as a freelance computer programmer. Yes, there were computers in the mid-80s. I sat across from the manager of a food products company in Ontario and listened as he described his problem and asked if I could provide a solution. I said, "Sure, I can get a system that'll do that." Now this was neither the truth nor a lie. It was a calculated risk. I had never done anything like what I was being asked for. I knew that I was young. I was just starting out. I was hungry. I needed the project. I also knew that although I had never done it before, it was both doable and I could learn what I needed to know. So I said, "Sure I can." What Shirky was writing about is that this kind of out-on-a-limb bravado is something men do and women don't. I'd say most men do and most women don't, just to protect myself a little. I'm not willing to go that far out on a limb. Shirky wrote, "It looks to me like women in general are often lousy at those kinds of behaviors, even when the situation calls for it. They aren't just bad at behaving like arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks. They are bad at behaving like self-promoting narcissists, antisocial obsessives, or pompous blowhards, even a little bit, even temporarily, even when it would be in their best interests to do so. Whatever bad things you can say about these behaviors, you can't say they are underrepresented among people who have changed the world. Now, this is asking women to behave more like men. But so what? We ask people to cross gender lines all the time. We're in the middle of a generations-long project to encourage men to be better listeners and more sensitive partners, to take more account of others' feelings and let out their own feelings more. Similarly, I see colleagues spending time and effort teaching women strategies for self-defense, including direct physical aggression. I sometimes wonder what would happen, though, if my college spent as much effort teaching women self-advancement as self-defense. Even in an ideal future, self-promotion will be a skill that produces disproportionate rewards. And if skill at self-promotion remains disproportionately male, those rewards will as well. This isn't because of oppression, it's because of freedom. Citizens of the developed world have an unprecedented amount of freedom to choose how we live, which means we experience life as a giant distributed discovery problem. What should I do? Where should I work? Who should I spend my time with? In most cases, there is no right answer, just trade-offs. Many of these trade-offs happen in the market. For everything from what you should eat to where you should live, there is a menu of options. And between your preferences and your budget, you'll make a choice. Some markets, though, are two-sided. While you're weighing your options, those options are also weighing you. People fortunate enough to have those options quickly discover that it's not enough to decide you want to go to Swarthmore or get money out of Kleiner Perkins. Those institutions must also decide if they will have you. Some of the most important opportunities we have are in two-sided markets: education and employment, contracts and loans, grants and prizes. And the institutions that offer these opportunities operate in an environment where accurate information is hard to come by. One of their main sources of judgment is asking the candidate directly, "Tell us why we should admit you. Tell us why we should hire you. Tell us why we should give you a grant. Tell us why we should promote you." In these circumstances, people who don't raise their hands don't get called on, and people who raise their hands timidly get called on less. Some of this is because assertive people get noticed more easily, but some of it is because raising your hand is itself a high-cost signal that you are willing to risk public failure in order to try something.
I gave this talk at Facebook not so long ago to about 100 employees. And a couple hours later, there was a young woman who works there sitting kind of outside my little desk, and she wanted to talk to me. And I said, okay, and she sat down and we talked, and she said, "I learned something today. I learned that I need to keep my hand up." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, you're giving this talk, and then you said you're going to take two more questions, and I had my hand up with lots of other people, and then you took two more questions, and I put my hand down, and I noticed all the women put their hand down, and then you took more questions, only from the men." And I thought to myself, wow, if it's me who cares about this, obviously, giving this talk, during this talk, I can't even notice that the men's hands are still raised and the women's hands are still raised. How good are we as managers of our companies and our organizations at seeing that the men are reaching for opportunities more than women?
That was Facebook's chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, at a TED Talk in December 2010. Orbcast.ca is the home of The Orb. It offers premium content to listeners that join in. You may want to post to the forum, read the transcript, or follow the links to references. Please visit orbcast.ca and check us out. I'm talking about risk this episode with much of the content from a blog post by Clay Shirky. He wrote, "It's tempting to imagine that women could be forceful and self-confident without being arrogant or jerky. But that's a false hope, because it's other people who get to decide when they think you're a jerk. And trying to stay under that threshold means giving those people veto power over your actions. To put yourself forward as someone good enough to do interesting things is, by definition, to expose yourself to all kinds of negative judgments."
There's a famous Harvard Business School study on a woman named Heidi Roizen, and she's an operator in a venture cap in a company in Silicon Valley, and she uses her contacts to become a very successful venture capitalist. In 2002, not so long ago, a professor who was then at Columbia University took that case and made it Heidi Roizen. And he gave that case out, both of them, to two groups of students. He changed exactly one word, Heidi to Howard, but that one word made a really big difference. He then surveyed the students, and the good news was the students, both men and women, thought Heidi and Howard were equally competent, and that's good. The bad news was that everyone liked Howard. He's a great guy. You want to work for him. You want to spend the day fishing with him. But Heidi, not so sure. She's a little out for herself. She's a little political. You're not sure you'd want to work for her.
There's the rub. Our expectations for men and women are so different. To step out on a limb can make a guy look bold and masculine. For a woman to do it can appear unseemly and, well, masculine. Why is taking a risk the purview of men? Why can't a woman fake it till she makes it? Why is this, that Shirky wrote, so rare? Another of my great former students saw a request from a magazine reporter doing a tech story and looking for examples. My friend, who'd previously been too quiet about her work, decided to write the reporter and said, "My work is awesome. You should write about it." The reporter looked at her work and wrote back saying, "Your work is indeed awesome, and I will write about it. I also have to tell you, you are the only woman who suggested her own work. Men do that all the time, but women wait for someone else to recommend them." My friend stopped waiting, and now her work is getting the attention it deserves. Shirky tries to temper his rant by making the behavior of men sound negative. He calls these kinds of behaviors arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks, and self-promoting narcissists, antisocial obsessives, or pompous blowhards. It doesn't help. Taking risks is a behavior that we all need. Generally, they can pay off. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes we do fall on our faces. The Orb is an excellent example. I'm spending my own money hoping people will find it useful, interesting, provocative, and would be willing to sign up or even donate. I've been at it now for 9 months and have had precious little back from you. I'm not on my face yet, and I'd like to think that I'm not faking it either. But I still may end up on my face. I'll keep it up for another few months. But I know that without support at orbcast.ca, this project will fail. Publicly. One difference is that if it fails, it will fail because not enough of the public were engaged. My failure will be for a small public. And I did that episode on failure last year that I still believe in. Failure is part of life, and we can't let that risk stop us from putting ourselves out there. But consider the typical job application. Most of the time, we don't really know what the job requires, and the company certainly doesn't know you and your potential. It's common knowledge that there are three kinds of stuff in the world: the stuff you know, the stuff you know you don't know, and everything else. All that else is the stuff you don't know you don't know. Some of it is stuff you can learn. Some of it isn't. That's the calculated risk. I know how good I am at learning something, and I can guess at how hard it will be to learn a particular thing. When I sit at an interview, I can take a measure of the situation and decide whether to claim the skill or not. Sarah, a respondent to Shirky's blog, wrote, "I think a lot of women who aren't willing to take risks are probably operating entirely within the self-limiting realm of stuff you know. They have this idea that if they don't know something, they just don't know it, and therefore they're not qualified, period. Successful people leverage their understanding of what they don't know and actively take steps to adapt."
The problem with these stories is that they show what the data shows. Women systematically underestimate their own abilities. If you test men and women and you ask them questions on totally objective criteria like GPAs, men get it wrong slightly high and women get it wrong slightly low. Women do not negotiate for themselves in the workforce. A study in the last 2 years of people entering the workforce out of college showed that 57% of boys entering, or men, I guess, are negotiating their first salary, and only 7% of women. And most importantly, men attribute their success to themselves, and women attribute it to other external factors. If you ask men why they did a good job, they'll say, I'm awesome. If you ask, obviously, why are you even asking? If you ask women why they did a good job, what they'll say is someone helped them. They got lucky. They worked really hard. We're all busy. Everyone's busy. A woman's busy. And she starts thinking about having a child. And from the moment she starts thinking about having a child, she starts thinking about making room for that child. How am I going to fit this into everything else I'm doing? And literally from that moment, she doesn't raise her hand anymore. She doesn't look for a promotion. She doesn't take on the new project. She doesn't say, me, I want to do that. She starts leaning back. One woman came to see me about this, and I kind of looked at her. She looked a little young, and I said, so are you and your husband thinking about having a baby? And she said, oh, no, I'm not married. She didn't even have a boyfriend. I said, you're thinking about this just way too early. But the point is that what happens once you start kind of quietly leaning back? Everyone who's been through this, and I'm here to tell you, once you have a child at home, your job better be really good to go back, because it's hard to leave that kid at home. Your job needs to be challenging. It needs to be rewarding. You need to feel like you're making a difference. And if 2 years ago you didn't take a promotion and some guy next to you did, if 3 years ago you stopped looking for new opportunities, you're going to be bored, because you should have kept your foot on the gas pedal. Don't leave before you leave. Stay in. Keep your foot on the gas pedal until the very day you need to leave to take a break for a child, and then make your decisions. Don't make decisions too far in advance, particularly ones you're not even conscious you're making.
That's Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, speaking at a conference of women in the workforce through TED Talks. I'm sure I have nothing to add. I'd like to come back to Clay Shirky's original post, and more specifically to a response written by Cherry Woodburn on her blog, Borderless Thinking. Shirky started his post with a story about a man who asked for a job recommendation, to which Shirky responded, "Tell me what you think I should say." The man then wrote overly superlative things, so Shirky toned it down, but later felt the guy got a better recommendation from him than he would have if he hadn't written overly superlative descriptors. So Shirky's line of thought continued that a woman would not have exaggerated her talents and therefore not received as good a recommendation. Please explain to me why that becomes the woman's fault and not Shirky's. I'll agree that the thought is Shirky's. I agree that it was Shirky that wrote about the behavioral differences between men and women. He also wrote that it's other people that judge whether you are arrogant or a jerk if you behave that way. As Sandberg said of the Heidi Roizen case study,
"The bad news was that everyone liked Howard. He's a great guy. You want to work for him. You want to spend the day fishing with him. But Heidi, not so sure. She's a little out for herself. She's a little political. You're not sure you'd want to work for her."
That was the judgment of both men and women. The problem is not just Shirky. It's all of us. We all judge this way. Sarah Glassmeyer, another blogger, wrote, "Seriously, y'all, I'm making this life up as I go along. People ask me if I want to have children, and all I can think is, are you high? Can't you tell that I just barely made it to work today with my hair brushed and my clothes on straight? I have no idea what I'm doing." Apparently, the secret to professional success is to act and speak and write confidently. One side effect of following through on this advice is that people are not always going to love you. As a matter of fact, they're going to be quite upset with you. That's okay. Some might say, if people aren't getting upset at you, you're not saying or doing anything of consequence. It's a scary thing to be disliked. But at the end of the day, you're the one that has to live with yourself. As another one of my favorite quotes says, "Be who you are and say what you feel. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind." That's Dr. Seuss, by the way. From my perspective, the issue starts early and really gets driven home by a society that says the guys ask the girls out. Seriously, guys have to go out on a limb and women have to wait. It stays that way through our entire lives. How broken is that? There was a comic strip recently, available at orbcast.ca, in which two guys are talking about girls. Gunther: "Rose is so pretty and smart and wonderful. I feel completely inept around her." Newt: "Dude, she likes you. She's giving you the signal. Big green light." "I know. That's the scary part. I'm afraid to proceed. I don't know what to do." "Do you feel that way with Crystal?"
"No, mostly I just feel stupider than usual."
Life does not come with a manual. We're all lucky to get to work with our hair brushed and our clothes on straight. Shirky finishes his blog post, "What I do know is this. It would be good if more women see interesting opportunities that they might not be qualified for. Opportunities which they might in fact mess up if they try to take them on, and then try to take them on. It would be good if more women got in the habit of raising their hands and saying, 'I can do that, sign me up. My work is awesome.' No matter how many people that behavior upsets. Step up. Take a risk. Succeed. And most importantly, own that you succeeded." Thank you.
Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.